The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. A week which has seen safety warnings from offshore pilots, a wind farm row breakout in the Highlands, trouble for oil companies drilling in the Falklands, and Bristol employees help out a local school. Trade unions issued a warning this week that pilots serving the offshore oil and gas industry in the North Sea could refuse to fly in extreme weather. The message from BALPA came on the 20th anniversary of the Cormorant Alpha helicopter crash when 11 people died. The union said pilots had concerns over a new safety device, a net system for retrieving casualties from the water. It's designed to be used when fast rescue craft can't be deployed. Industry body Oil and Gas UK said the device was in line with health and safety executive policy, but Flight Safety Officer Dave Reynolds told our reporter Emma Glacken that all flying should be suspended if conditions are so severe.
The major concern is the fact that the Oil and Gas UK, who represent the oil producers, wish us to fly out to the rigs and back from the rigs in sea states of up to 9 metres high, sea state 6, using something called the Dacon Scoop, which is a means of recovering equipment from the sea. And we're not prepared to do that because we don't believe it's safe to do so.
Now, is this a case of it's purely because of the weather, or is there fears about this new equipment as well, using that in these extreme weather conditions as well?
Well, the equipment isn't new. The equipment has been around for some time, but for the last 5 years, the Oil and Gas UK have been trying to convince us that this recovery device is a safe means of recovering people alive from the sea, which it isn't. The issue is, you probably recognise the word sea state, above a sea state 6, where you get wave heights of up to 9 metres, this is going to be the only means of recovering people out of the sea. The device is a massive structure on the side of a ship, which has to be manoeuvred alongside people in the water. So it's the fact that this is going to be the only means of recovery. And what we're saying is it's not safe to predicate an operation where the means of recovery is by this device, because we don't believe that it's safe to do so.
And what are you calling on the Oil and Gas UK, the industry, to do effectively now?
What we're saying is where you have a situation where rescue craft, something called an FRC, rescue crafts, can be launched, which is in sea states below 6, then it is reasonable to operate, because there is a reasonable chance of recovery where we don't have the very high sea state and the Dacon Scoop. Below those levels and without that equipment, using ships or boats, then it is reasonable to do so.
Now, what do you think, is it an alternative that can be developed, or what would you like to see happening?
Well, at the moment, there is no alternative. Because if you were to, the only other way to get out there would be to use other helicopters. And of course, if that other helicopter had a problem, then they too, you know, would need to be rescued by another helicopter. It would be the only way. And obviously, so on and so forth. So there is, at the moment, there is currently no way around that. The only way around that is rather like when you get very poor weather conditions with conventional aircraft. Conventional aircraft can operate in very limiting conditions of visibility. You probably understand that aircraft can virtually land with no visibility. But aircraft can't land in 60-mile-an-hour winds. They can't land when the runway is covered in ice. So you don't operate, because the aircraft can't safely be controlled and operate in these weather extremes. You have a similar situation here in the North Sea with the weather, with the sea state, where the sea state is preventing you from being rescued. And the only way of you being rescued would be with this mechanical device, which is designed to lift out equipment and other boats from the sea. It's not designed to rescue people from the sea.
Now, just finally, Dave, if you could just kind of sum up what the what the union's now doing. Like, I mean, obviously there is this fear that, you know, pilots could refuse to fly in these extreme weather conditions. Is this something that's going to be pursued? What are the actions going to be taken?
Well, at the moment, we haven't been in that situation. The operators of the helicopters are obviously being paid by the organisations which Oil and Gas UK represent. You know, the Essos, the Shells, the Exxons, all these people. They want to get people to and from the rigs. It's what they do. It's how they make their money. It's their living. We understand that. But what we're saying is unreasonable to expose their employees and our pilots to this risk. So what we're saying is that the operators of the aircraft, the Bristows, the CHC helicopters, the Bonds, should not be operating their aircraft in these sea states. Up until now, we've had a five-year to-ing and fro-ing, shall we put it, between ourselves and Oil and Gas UK, or the operators rather, where on each occasion the operators have eventually said, OK, we won't operate out there. We respect your view. They come under pressure from the oil companies again. They approach us and say, we wish to operate the aircraft out there again. We come back and say, no, it's not safe, and they back down. So far we haven't been in a confrontational situation, and we don't really expect to be, because we think that the regulators and the operators see sense. But as I say, they're under tremendous pressure from the oil producers to continue operating in these very hazardous conditions. So we're not calling for any action. All we're calling for is Oil and Gas UK to stop pressurising the operators into asking our members to fly. That's all we're looking for.
Also this week, anti-wind farm campaigners have hit out over a developer's appeal against a planning refusal to the west of Loch Ness. Highland Council rejected the application by Drumba Sustainable Energy in September last year. They branded plans to erect 23 turbines as obscene and terrible. But a pre-examination hearing this week was the start of Holyrood's consideration of the plans. Local resident Denise Davies spoke to Rachel McAllister.
Last night we had a meeting just to discuss this forthcoming pre-examination meeting. And again, there's no change of heart. The people feel that the proposal is far too close to homes, it's too large, and it needs to be rejected.
And what's the inquiry examining?
The three things that the reporter is the person that will be running the public inquiry and reading through every single piece of evidence that he has, including the developer's application. He will be focusing on policy, visual impact, and noise. Whether those three things continue on through the public inquiry, we will know better after Thursday.
I mean, is it frustrating that despite this wind farm being rejected by Highland Council, it then still has to go to the Scottish Government?
That is pretty much how it would work. Most developers would pursue what is in this case an appeal. We hope that the reporter will, you know, uphold that decision, but the frustration is in the fact that the developers obviously are not seriously considering the impact they will have on local residents, which has been greatly reflected through the unanimous decision to reject this application. So to appeal is a bit of a kick in the teeth to local people, but that's pretty much what we expected to happen.
In terms of where you live, how would this affect you and your family and your house?
Well, I'm considered, I can't remember the exact terminology in the environmental statement, that's the application, but I am to be severely adversely affected. So in my opinion, and the discussions I've had with my family about this, is if the proposal were permitted to go ahead, we would not be able to live in our home anymore, not comfortably and not for the reasons that we live where we live.
I mean, is that because the wind farm would be so close?
Yeah, well, the wind farm from my house, personally, is 1.2, 1.3 kilometres. I can't remember the exact distance. And we can see, assuming it went ahead, we would see turbines from every single window in the house except for the bathroom window. Every single window. We would see it from our garden. I would see it from the place where I work. I'm an artist, and I would see it from my workspace. My husband, who's a carpenter, would see the turbines from his workspace. And it's not just one or two turbines or blade tips skimming over the hills. It would be the 23 turbines in their entirety, much of the infrastructure, and so on. It would basically be one major industrial site, factory, wind factory in front of our home, which right now looks out onto hills.
I mean, it is a beautiful area. I mean, yes, regardless of, you know, you living near to the site and your personal impact, what kind of impact is it going to have on, you know, that beautiful landscape?
Well, I think it'll be devastating. The A833 is the road that runs through the area, and it's a major tourist route for not just people traveling independently around Scotland, but cyclists, motorcycle riders, walkers. We've got the Great Glen Way just next to it, next to the wind farm site. The buses that visit Loch Ness, that come from Invergordon, come from Inverness, they go on this road to or from Loch Ness and Fort Augustus. It's a very, very busy area for tourism, but it's also a very productive area for crofting and small holdings, farming. There's lots of artists and craftspeople that live in the area, and it's the natural environment that inspires them. I think that a wind farm of this size and this scale and this design would be catastrophic for this area. It's not an area that should be industrialized. And the reason the people live here, it will be ruined for them. The people that live closest, and when I say closest, I mean, you know, sort of up to 3 or 4 kilometers, and anybody who wants to visit the area, visiting the Abriacan Forest Trust, walking the Great Glen Way, all these outdoor pursuits will be greatly affected if this wind farm is permitted.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, delivering asset integrity solutions to the global energy industry.
Later in the week, oil companies were threatened with legal action if they explore off the coast of the Falklands. Argentina's stepping up pressure on the UK government over the islands, which they claim they own. The country's foreign minister has said the activities of oil and gas firms are illegal and illegitimate. Joe Odber spoke to Aberdeen University Professor Alec Kemp about the issue.
What's your reaction, Professor Kemp, to this move by the Argentinian government?
I think that it will, of course, be contested that they have the right to do this in law, because certainly the UK doesn't accept that Argentina has sovereign rights over a continental shelf around the Falkland Islands. So it will certainly be contested by the UK. On the wider issue, as to what effect it might have, of course, Argentina government decide who gets rights to explore and produce oil and gas or anything else within Argentina itself. So the effect on investors would depend on to what extent they have assets or acreage in Argentina itself, because clearly they would have a problem of offending the Argentina government and might have to decide whether to explore or produce in Argentina or in the Falklands waters. The other effect could be if Argentina persuaded its neighbours in Latin America not to allow supply bases, construction yards for oil activity in the waters around the Falkland Islands. So these are the wider implications of this confrontation.
So So the pressure, you'd say, would appear to be political rather than legal. That's the threat against oil companies.
Well, the legal position would be contested by the British government. And they would say that, I'm sure, that the Argentina government doesn't have legal authority over the waters in the Falklands continental shelf.
Do you think this makes it an unlikely prospect to look for oil? Because I think we've talked about this before, and they have found some oil, but perhaps not as much as they were hoping for.
Well, I mean, the effect on investors will, as I suggest, vary, depending on whether they've got interest in Argentina itself. Remember, there is oil production, gas production in Argentina. But if a company doesn't have interest in Argentina, and then that won't be an issue in itself. An investor in the Falklands waters will have to consider is, what effect would it have on their operations for exploration and eventually development if they are possibly liable to be harassed in the wider area out there, politically harassed, I mean. A court case, I think, would be very much contested by British government, and an investor from Britain in the Falklands would be looking for support from the British government. The effect on operations is another matter. If Argentina were to persuade neighbouring countries not to allow construction yards, for example, to produce FPSOs for developing an oil field off the Falklands water in the Falklands waters, that might cause a problem. It would mean that supplies of goods and services and let's say an FPSO would have to be sourced from other places.
And finally, for this week, Northeast helicopter workers have been lending a hand at a local special needs school. Bristow employees are volunteering at Camp Hill as part of the Uplift initiative. They help paint the school's benches and main workshop. Flight engineering specialist David Barron told us about the project.
It's part of a community and social responsibility programme to try and make a positive change in the areas that Bristow's operates. So really it's to give our time and services, contribute to charities and educational resources where we live. It's also to help make a positive difference in the areas that we operate. It's a very interesting school here, and it does excellent work with young people with very specialised needs. And we thought that would be an excellent opportunity for us to give a little bit of our time back to these people who need it so much. We've had the opportunity to meet a few children already today, and they seem delighted with the work that we've been doing here. So it's been really exciting to see them and to get a bit of time to spend with them. It's been a great day. We've got a chance to meet people from lots of different departments within the company, and to get away from our normal day-to-day job and to do something quite interesting and hopefully beneficial.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services. Global leaders in knowledge-based asset integrity management solutions.